tuning in to Inside Scoop Live. I'm your host, Juanita Watson, and today I've brought to the program a very interesting woman, Dorothy Weil. She is the author of many books, but her latest is A Good Woman, which is out now on Plainview Press. Dorothy Weil has published a comic novel bought by Disney Productions, a memoir, a collection of poetry, a young adult novel, a critique of America's first best-selling woman author, and hundreds of articles for magazines and newspapers. Aside from the articles, which range from humor to art to a stolen racehorse, her theme has been the lives of girls and women. She has written of the challenges women face at all ages, from adolescence to midlife to old age. She is a graduate of the University of Chicago, the Art Academy of Cincinnati, and holds a PhD from the University of Cincinnati. She has taught at the Cincinnati and Edgecliff Colleges, where she developed courses in creative writing and women in fiction. She is almost a native Cincinnatian, having lived there since the fifth grade after her childhood living in places such as diverse as a steamboat, a marina, and a swanky hotel. And I'm really interested in finding out more about this very, very eclectic background she has. So Dorothy also paints when possible at a studio near her Riverside home. Just so happy to have you on the program today, Dorothy. Welcome to Inside Scoop Live.
Hi, and I'm very glad to be here. Welcome to meet you.
Yes, yes. So thanks for joining us, and really congratulations on this new book. It's really a fantastic, fantastic book. So how long was this one in the works, Dorothy?
It has been in the works for quite a long time. It's a story that I started some time ago and have revised and worked on over the years. And it's one of my favorite books.
It is.
I'm glad to be talking about it.
Yeah. Oh, great. So you've written in so many different forms. You've been involved in documentaries. You know, you have such a diverse life. You're an artist. How does writing this format as a novel differ from your other creative pursuits?
Well, not a lot in a sense. Of course, working on television scripts was a little different in that you have to think in pictures, and so it's a little more visual, but I tend to think in pictures anyway. And someone who read or had listened to one of the pieces that I wrote, who didn't know me, said, "You're a painter, aren't you?"
Mm-hmm.
So all of my works are very visual in nature. I like to really see the scenes, and I write fairly dramatically, so that rather than tell the story, I like for the reader to experience what is happening to the character, so I try to make it as real as possible.
Mm-hmm. So interesting. So what sparked the idea of this story that you tell in A Good Woman?
This novel, like some of my other works actually, has had a it began by reading something in the newspaper. There was an article about an old couple that had one of the spouses was terminally ill, and they had a very tragic occurrence in the family. And then I had read other articles about old people who were being threatened by hoodlums in the neighborhood or who had actually been killed by local toughs. And in one case, the prosecutor, when the older person had actually committed a crime, had said, "Well, this is murder pure and simple, and it will be prosecuted like any other case." Mm-hmm. There was no thought of mitigation or how old the people were 86 years old in this case, and they were very ill. And I thought, God, that's so lacking in compassion, and there must have been events and losses and things that caused this tragedy to happen. And so I tried to imagine what these people, similar people, might have been up against. So the story was inspired by these articles, but it's not based on any particular one.
On anyone, yes, mm-hmm. yes. So, well, tell us about this book. Tell us about Mary Lou Friedman. She is the central character, but really tell us about what happens in A Good Woman.
Okay, fine. Well, it's the story of Mary Lou Friedman, and the story is all told from her point of view. She's a spunky 85-year-old woman whose life slides into chaos when she's threatened by local hoodlums and her husband becomes terminally ill. There's the parallel to the newspaper story.
Mm-hmm.
As Mary Lou fights for her family and home, she revisits her past as a wild farm girl, a naive young bride, an inexperienced mother, and a mature woman discovering her sexuality. Now, throughout the novel, she copes with the changing expectations and challenges faced by women of the 20th century, the final hurdle being old age in a world where people live long but receive little respect. Unfortunately, and ultimately, Mary Lou is stripped of everything she depends on, and vowing to defend her home, she acquires a gun with tragic results. Now, I don't want to say exactly what the tragic results were because I don't want to ruin the ending of the story.
Of course not.
I think dramatic suspense is very important in any novel or short story or prose, play, whatever, that you've got to care what happens next. And you have to care about the characters and what happens to them and root for them and hope that things are going to turn out okay.
Mm-hmm.
And but we see, as Mary Lou goes through the year of her difficulties, she, at relevant moments, thinks back over her life to that date. So while the main action takes place in a year, she thinks back to her other times in her life and things that are important to the present.
Mm-hmm. How close did you get to Mary Lou in as a character as you were writing this story?
Well, I guess one tries to get as close as possible to the characters. You try to get, I think, behind the character, try to get down into the character. I think Dickens it was who would act out his characters, much to the fright and alarm of his family.
Yeah.
Now, I don't go that far. I wish that I could, but so I don't, in no sense, identify with the character,
mm-hmm.
but I try to get behind them and to see things from their point of view and how this person would feel and just draw on whatever emotions that I can come up with that I feel would be relevant.
Mm-hmm. Did she evolve in this story for you in ways you weren't expecting, or did you have a pretty set idea of the path you wanted her to take?
I knew what the path would be because I had the plot pretty well under control. It was a definite plot, and plotting is difficult, but I always have said that I would just give anything for a really good plot. Well, here I've had a good plot. So, and if your plot is well developed and you know where you're going, it's something to hang the whole story on, and it gives a kind of skeleton to the story.
Yeah.
The other characters just popped out of nowhere. Her
oh.
daughters and her grandson and other family members that she has to deal with throughout this period of life just are total imagination, and is Mary Lou, really. But she did change somewhat over the course of the book in that she became less pathetic and more spunky because she has a lot to cope with, and
yes.
and she does try her best. She's a person who is, that's why it's called a good woman, because she is trying to be a good woman.
Okay, so how, you kind of consider her a woman of the 20th century, so what are some mm-hmm. of the changes that you really wanted to spotlight in this novel? Because, you really account for how she evolves, how the world changes through the 20th century.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of those changes?
Well, Mary Lou, and as I say, we see everything from Mary Lou's point of view. A lot of the changes that happen in her lifetime affect her, and a lot of them don't. A lot of them pass over, as I've said in one section, like local rain showers. They just go past. But since she was born in 1904 and dies in 1991, there's quite a lot of changes.
Yeah.
For instance, women weren't allowed to vote when she was a child. The expectations for women were very strict to be a good wife and a good mother. And in fact, her stepmother tells her that whistling girls and crowing hens always come to bad ends.
Oh, God.
gosh. So this, I mean, this is very old. She was raised in a very old-fashioned setting. And while Mary Lou had some ambitions to be a teacher, and she always loves to read because her grandmother had taught her poetry and had read to her as a child, those things have to go by the wayside because the home and family come first, and she has a lot to deal with her family. So her ambitions are put away. The right to life is something that comes along that she thinks about because this is something that the idea of an abortion in her young life would have been totally out of the question. Women's liberation is something that comes along, but doesn't really touch Mary Lou. It affects her daughters, but Mary Lou is really a little beyond the age where women's lib does a lot for her. She thinks about it and what its meanings are. She lives in that period, lives through 5 wars and 16 presidents. That's something that found astounding, that someone who lives an ordinary lifespan can live through so many changes. The atomic bomb.
Yeah.
None of these things were expected or part of her childhood. These are always all things that came along when she was a mother and wife. And the sexual revolution, she's kind of nonplussed when suddenly her daughter's friend has a young man move in with her, and her daughter suggests that she wants to bring a young man home and can't see why mother and dad don't think it's fine that he move in the same room with her. A lot of parents have gone through this in that period that this was pretty shocking to them. Mary Lou is a fairly liberal person who tries to understand things and tries to accept change, sometimes successfully and some not.
So the last year of her life, when there was a lot of events going on, was that basically a cathartic time for her in her life where she kind of wrapped things up? Do you know what I mean?
I don't think the novel is really in that sense of looking back and saying, oh, everything's been fine or something like that. It's, one of the local reviewers here said, that I do not take the particularly sunny view that everything always turns out fine. And she says that the characters are pretty much like people that live down the street and don't know them. Yeah. She does come to she has a kind of problem that with her husband that has been an ongoing problem, and she does come to a catharsis on that, or a forgiveness that happens in their last years together.
Interesting. So tell us about her husband, Don. And I know in this book and throughout their relationship and towards the end, really Mary Lou ends up becoming a strong protective caregiver to her husband. And it's a complete role reversal from their relationship. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
Don is, when Mary Lou first meets Don, and it's a very romantic little section of the novel where they meet, she's only 17 years old, and Don is a very husky and handsome young man who is working at Mary Lou's father's mill, loading sacks of meal and corn and so on onto wagons. And that's another thing. Automobiles weren't all that popular when they were just starting out when Mary Lou was a young woman. So when Don takes her out for a date, he takes her on a sleigh ride or a wagon ride. He doesn't take her in a car until later. But he's a very, he's a less thoughtful person than Mary Lou. He's intelligent, but he works with his hands most of his life, and then later in his life, he develops a successful construction business, and so he doesn't really. Mary Lou loves poetry and reading. Don doesn't really share that with her until much later in life. But he's been a very strong and very faithful and a loving husband. And Mary Lou, when she's a young bride, very much depends on his strength. as he becomes ill, of course, she has to become the caretaker and has to watch out for him and make sure that he's well. So there is a role reversal there.
Yes, very, very interesting. So the one of the main aspects of this story is the fact that elderly are really all too frequently the victims of crime, and you really spotlight that. Would you tell us a little bit about the fear that older generations have today? You know, even having gone through so much in that past century, you know, you talk about the wars and just the depression, all of that, and the fear that the older generations have today of the world we're living in. I mean, this can be a really scary place for the elderly.
Well, it can. Now, in this particular case, and in many cases, I think older people, have fears of illness and of financial fears. And, of course, that's right now a big one for a lot of people, because they're using up their, you know, they may have worked hard all their lives, and then they're using up their savings to on health care.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in this particular neighborhood that Mary Lou and Don live in, it's a neighborhood that they loved when they were young, and they have a nice home there. But the neighborhood itself has degenerated somewhat. And this is true of many, many neighborhoods. I think there's has been a loss of community where, people from cities move out to the suburbs and things change in the community. So that, mm-hmm. that support is gone. And then crime. As I say, I've seen a lot of reports in the newspaper of older people picked on because, people think they're weak or something like that. I don't want to give too depressing of a picture of either the book or of the lives of old people. This is a specific story. And while some of it will apply generally, there are other lives that are full of activity and interest.
Sure. So tell us about Mary Lou's grandchildren and her children that you pepper in into this story, because really, you know, this book will appeal to a wide variety of age readers.
Yeah. Well, I hope so, and I hope that the experiences and feelings and so on that Mary Lou has should be familiar to older people and people who may have even shared some of these events and will enjoy looking back and thinking, oh, yes, I was such and such age when President Kennedy was shot, or I remember the civil rights, or I remember the coming back from World War II. Then I think for younger people, it can give the younger readers a glimpse into the hearts of their older relatives, because that's a place that they probably can't enter on their own. And I do believe that it's important to know where we came from and what went on before our own lives. But I feel that sometimes that one's own relatives, you know, we know more sometimes about celebrities than we do about our own grandmothers or our own mothers, maybe, or our own sisters.
Mm-hmm.
And I think fiction can give a kind of glimpse or a picture of what maybe other people are feeling. I like what Stephen Birmingham said about the novel. He's a well-known social historian and also a best-selling author of
mm-hmm.
novels. He called the novel tender, touching, and terrifying. He said it's not just about seniors, but it's about humans. And I like that statement. I think that says what I would hope the way the book would be seen.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is for younger readers, I think some of these things that they read about would seem, oh, you know, that's quaint, or that's, oh my gosh, I didn't realize things were quite like that, or what it must have been like to be around before we had the particular moral situation that we have now, and the ways we talk and act and so on today. But they also may see in Mary Lou and Don and the characters in it reflections of their own feelings or emotions, because as Stephen Birmingham said, it's about humans, not just about seniors.
Yeah.
So there may be very well be corresponding feelings and thoughts with, even though Mary Lou's an older woman. Well, throughout the novel, she's not always older.
That's true.
We see her back when she's a young girl.
Yes.
Then we see her in middle life, and then we see her in old age. So, so I think there's, food here for an interest for, as you say, a wide variety of readers. I'm hoping that that will be true.
Absolutely. So why do you think that there is a bit of a generation gap? I mean, when you're looking at the times that Mary Lou lived in and that you kind of chronicle throughout the story to the world we're living in now, I mean, I think that there's almost, I don't know, the world has just changed so much that there is a detachment for the younger generation. So I'm wondering what your thoughts are on that, of a younger generation coming to understand how we've gotten to the place that we are and not forgetting about the past.
Well, I'm hoping that by reading this might help somewhat.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure how, in some basic ways, how different people are. You know, I mean, their style is different. The young people, the way they talk and the way they act, and their dating traditions have changed so radically. Their music is so different from that of earlier generations. I mean, the music that they listen to when they're young and dating.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when Mary Lou and Don were dating back in the very early part of the century, everything was very romantic. All the songs that they would have sung were romantic and perhaps funny, but some of them are funny. But the music today is so much more dramatic and vital and you know, big crowds of people going, whereas Mary Lou and Don's generation would have gone out dancing in a much smaller place, like a nightclub or a bar or someplace like that, and not going to big rallies and that kind of thing. So those seem to me like style difference. But I noticed that, women wanting certain things and men wanting certain things, from what I read and what I observe in the younger people that I know, they don't seem to be all that
different. Right. I imagine when you just break it all down, the hopes and the dreams and the fears on a deeper core level are basically the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. I think, it seems to me that there's an awfully large group of people that still want marriage. They obviously, with the, it seems like there's a real growth in everybody having babies, and you know, and the way that the babies are being cared for, the child-centered home.
Mm-hmm.
Children are getting so much attention these days from their parents. At least certain parents, not you know, other parents. You can't ever make a totally general statement, but I know the parents are so involved in the children's lives these days, and this really kind of goes back to the 1950s. That was a child-centered era too.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that a large number of people still very much value a home, a family, and they want to live in a pleasant and happy and loving environment.
Yes.
And that is, of course, Mary Lou's main hope, that she is what I call a nest builder. She's, you know, throughout all of these happenings, she tries to keep the family together.
Mm.
And her daughters don't always get along. In fact, they don't get along very well at all.
Mm-hmm.
And the son is in another, you know, that's again, families are spread all over. The son is living in California, so he's, and the story takes place in Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm.
And so the son is kind of somewhat out of the picture. But the two daughters are sort of sparring all the time. And,
oh, interesting.
And
Mary
Lou's best friend is her grandson. She has a young grandson, 19 years old, and she gets along great with her grandson. She's very,
isn't that interesting? There's a special bond between grandparents and
mm-hmm.
and their grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So Mary Lou and her husband had helped raise the grandson, and so they had really been parents to him for a certain part of his life.
Mm.
And he's a very beloved person.
Mm-hmm. Now, you have written extensively about the lives of girls and women, and I'd like to know why this has become a central theme for you in your writing.
Well, I guess because I've been a girl.
Besides the obvious.
And I think that interests a lot of women writers. And I don't think men writers have done a very good job in creating believable women characters. They usually, well, many of us who are scholars have studied what men have done with women characters. And they always talked about the Madonna or the prostitute, that they were either bad girls or untouchably wonderful good girls.
Mm-hmm.
But ordinary flesh and blood women were not very well presented in fiction. And I still think there's a lot of room for depictions of women that show them in a more well-rounded way and show more about their lives besides just their love lives or their sex lives or their styles and so on, but that show many more sides to them. I don't think a lot has been done with wives and mothers in a deep way.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly I think the male writers have miserably failed in this category.
Yes, I think you're right.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Established in 1998, Rebecca's Reads is a book review and publicity service serving a large reading audience as well as a wide community of authors, publishers, publicists, and buyers and sellers. They offer reviews of recently published books as well as chapter readings, teasers, and videos to help you decide what book you would like to read next. Their insightful author interviews take connecting reader and author one step further, and if you decide you would like to purchase a book, an easy-to-navigate link will allow you to purchase the book immediately online. For the authors, publicists, and publishers, Rebecca's Reads has a variety of publicity services to help them market their books to their reading audience. Their services are budget-friendly and effective. For buyers and sellers, they have a monthly list of current reviews in the Book Review Index for easy browsing, as they know your time is precious and efficiency is the priority. Be sure to visit RebeccasReads.com and browse around their new space. Whatever your literary need, this user-friendly website may be just what you're looking for. Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Just to remind you, I'm talking today with Dorothy Wild, author of A Good Woman. You can find out more about Dorothy through her website, dorothywild.com. So what do you think it does for a woman to read a novel that is presented in this way and really an honest, deeper look at the heart and the mind and the soul of a woman?
Well, I think it would do what any good novel will do, is take you into a world that you may not know a lot about or may not have thought about a lot or that you are curious about. And in seeing that other people have suffered through particular events, may give you a little courage and some feeling that, hey, I'm not so weird after all.
Mm.
I wish I could think right off what the statement that Jane Austen made about novels.
Oh, yeah.
I can't think of it right now, but it was a very good statement about that they were presented people in all their well-roundedness and often with wit and humor and interest besides. And I feel that there is a catharsis too, and this is a tragic story, and there is a catharsis in tragedy. Mm-hmm. Like, one of my things that I thought about while I was writing was King Lear, and I thought, well, that story has been around a long time, and that's about an old man who is really, and if you strip it to its bones, it's a dysfunctional family par excellence.
Yes.
And he's rather a foolish old man who expects more of his children than children really can give.
Yes.
And is a victim of his own pride.
Mm.
And in a sense, Mary Lou is a minor sort of King Lear, because she also is a very proud person who, while she is fighting for home and family, really does not accept help from other people, and that may be one of her faults, because she's not perfect. I mean, she's, you know, she's a striver and she's a fighter, but she has some, you know, just plain crankiness, and she's, as I say, she's not perfect. She makes some poor judgments.
Do you think that that was specific to her character, or do you think that generation carried a lot of pride with it in wanting to do things on their own and not ask for help?
Well, yes, I do. I think that generation was probably very
self-reliant.
I know my father. This person would be Mary Lou would be of about my mother's generation.
Okay.
And yes, they always to us. I know they always stressed independence, and you should never ask for help. And my father particularly did not approve of any kind of social programs, and during the Depression would not ask for help and would not work for the WPA, for example. There's a scene in the memoir that I wrote about my family in which my mother had accepted a turkey from a neighborhood house that was a place where children went to do their homework after school, and that provided classes and a play field and that kind of thing for children after school.
Mm-hmm.
And they gave turkeys to families that were undergoing problems in the Depression. And when my father realized that the turkey was already cooked, and when he realized it was from the neighborhood house, he would not eat it.
Really?
He had a real fit. And said, you know, I don't need charity. And Mary Lou is not quite that proud, but my father came from the Kentucky Hills, and his father was a town marshal, and they were very respected people. My father had a good career as a steamboat captain, and he had been in charge of his life, and he didn't want to have anybody giving him anything. And Mary Lou has a little bit of that. She's a farm girl, and the people on the farm ran their own lives. And I don't know that that's changed all that much. I don't know about, maybe young people are more willing to accept help. I don't know. I've never really talked to young people about that. I see a lot of young people because I have children, and through my church and places like that and activities, I talk to young people, but I haven't talked to them on that topic. I was going to say they want to be independent, but then you read a lot about kids moving back with their parents.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I guess there was a lot of that in Mary Lou's day, too, but I think Mary Lou would not have been one.
I think that maybe the reasoning for that is just a little different these days. And, you know, I don't think pride will ever go away, but quite possibly there was just a desire for self-reliance and independence that may have just been a little stronger in that generation than today. I'm not too sure. You know, you mentioned your memoir, which is called The River Home. You know, you have such a unique upbringing. I'd love to hear a little bit more about how you grew up and really how this probably cultivated the life that you live now, your creative endeavors. Tell us a little bit more about your background.
Well, my earliest memories, I wasn't actually born on a steamboat. I was born in Illinois, but my family traveled a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And because my father was a steamboat captain and had worked on some 30 packet boats. And so when my earliest memories are of living on a steamboat that my dad was captain of. It was an excursion boat docked at Omaha. And it was in the winter of 1934, and the river was iced over. The little cabin we lived in was so small it drew the family together. And so it made the family life very unusually intimate. That may be a reason why I'm so interested in family, in the family story in general, because mine was, I would say, fairly dramatic with the people living so close together and not being so much in contact with other people. So those memories were very, very clear. And then the drama of the ice outside and the weather, and my brother and I would climb around the boat and walk on the ice and row with our father in a skiff. And we learned to be adventurous and curious and to love nature. So I think that's the definiteness of it all. I think has had an effect on my writing because I always look for the objective correlative, which means that the emotions that I write about are embodied in the people and in the places and things. So I don't use a lot of abstract language, which I don't like. I try to keep the language simple and the feelings described through some bodily change or through a smell or sight or color or something like that. I love metaphor, and I try to use metaphor carefully to, again, to bring out the emotions of the people.
Yes.
And I think some of that came from being in, I don't know, maybe that doesn't make sense to people.
No, I think it
does. It makes sense to me.
No, and, I think it does. When you're in such a tight sort of a bond and uh-huh. intimacy with your family at a young age, I think that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, well, it certainly makes you interested, I think, in the family. And my parents were extremely articulate people. Mm-hmm. You know, my mother was an artist. She was a poet and a painter, not professional, but she did it as a hobby and to express herself. And so then I think you asked a little bit about our life. We did move on during the Depression. My father was, because the steamboat trade kind of dried up, he would, we went from sort of one place to another as he was trying to settle down into work. And so we lived at a marina on the river, which is a you know, just a float and a club boat where people keep their pleasure boats. And then my father went into business and was quite successful in that. And so we moved to the swanky new hotel in Cincinnati, which was the Terrace Hilton.
Uh-huh.
And it was a very modern building, and Cincinnati had not really seen a building like this before. It was built in the 40s, I think. And so we jumped from, you know, being in a very tiny little one room in a not very wonderful area, and then to being in a kind of ritzy place. Quite a range of experiences, and
yeah.
that may have helped me in my writing. I certainly do feel that the, you know, the numbers of people I've come in contact with through my teaching and other work, you know, and my family have given me a lot of ideas.
Mm-hmm. I imagine with those experiences, too, as a young girl, it really made you a keen observer of what's going on around you.
Well, that is true. I used to have an absolutely photographic memory.
Mm.
I would have been able to tell you if I meet you or met you, I would have been able to tell you when I met you, exactly what you were wearing, what you said, what your name was, and so on. Now, I'm losing that capacity. I've met too many people.
Yeah.
I've had too many experiences, I guess, but at one time, I really, and a good memory is certainly helpful to a writer because when you hear something that's interesting that you think might round out your character or might be typical of your character, you just kind of stow it away on your running tape, and you never know when it's going to pop out and be useful in your writing.
Mm-hmm.
I follow Henry James, who said, try to be the sort of person upon whom nothing is ever lost. Oh. And so I try to when I hear something interesting, I try to keep it in my mind, or I may even jot it down.
Mm-hmm.
A new word, if I hear a new word, a new slang word, or just a new way of saying something, I always remember it and grab it because it's part of the stuff that you need to write.
Oh, yes, absolutely. So when you're writing or when you're painting and you're putting that pen to paper or, you know, the brush to the canvas, is there anything in particular that you're thinking about that is the same, or are you emptying your mind? Like what are you thinking about in that process?
I'm thinking totally about that work in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't drift around. I don't think you could. I think either writing or painting, either one requires a complete and total concentration.
Yeah.
And you may sit there staring into space for a while, but it's usually because you're trying to come up with the exact right word and the exact image that you want to get across your emotion and your situation. And but no, you can't think about other things. And I certainly in my own work don't wait for inspiration. As somebody asked a writer, when did he feel inspired? And he said, I get my inspiration when I'm sitting at my desk with my pen in my hand. In other words, go to work.
Yeah.
It will come or it won't. Sometimes you have a day when just either don't get a lot written or you write something and then you have to scratch it all out the next day. But the best thing to do is to get it. You really have to get to the desk or get to the easel and get cracking.
Yes, yes. So, Dorothy, how relevant do you feel fiction work is in this day and age?
How relevant?
How relevant, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think it's as relevant as it ever was, and which I think very highly of it, because to me, reading novels and reading poetry, reading, if they're good works of art and not just junk, is the education of the feelings. I think that was one of the things that Suzanne Langer, the great philosopher, said when she was talking about the arts and their place in education. And the education of the feelings, and I think that that is what the arts can do, because you are entering other people's lives and you are developing compassion for that person. If you read a book about, say, a person from another country who is, if it's well written, that person will have human elements that are similar to your own, and you can no longer look down on that person or look at them as an object or somebody to be hated or to be detested, but someone with human feelings and so on. So I think it's that. It also, of course, is a development. If work is written well, poetry and fiction and artwork, all kinds of art. They develop the aesthetic sense too, where you learn to appreciate when you read the great classics how well this person had, this author or artist or whatever, has put this material together, and how you can see some of the techniques or the
creativity,
amazing work that the person has done to put it together, and you get I think an appreciation of your environment and your world, you know, so what it can look like, what it does look like, and also the psychology below the surface and the things that are below the surface. So, yeah, I think it's as relevant as ever. Unfortunately, I think novels in book form are not being read as much because of the internet and so on, and people are learning in a different way, and I'm not sure. It would be interesting to try to get into the mind of someone who's been brought up with computers and so on. My own children are readers.
They are.
And my one son is pretty good at computers, and he's an artist, and the other one is a music teacher. And they seem to have a range of taste in music. Both of them like classical music and the more modern popular music as well.
Mm-hmm.
But they both read, and we are a family of readers. And so I'm not really acquainted with I would like to be.
I'm sure that there will always be a need for fiction. You know, doesn't matter how the technology changes, how people take in information or express their creativity in the arts. I think that there will always be a need and a desire for fiction.
Well, we certainly need stories, and we need good stories.
Yes.
Stories are part of people's lives, and a lot of times in a piece of fiction or, say, a memoir, you think that you're telling a very specific story, but it resounds with a lot of other people in the memoir, for example, I thought, well, we had such an unusual life because of the way we hopped all over the country and living on boats and living in hotels and living in strange places. But so many people who responded to the memoir said, oh, I just found myself. I thought I was in my own room and I, you know, and,
wow.
And as if I were right there, and that there, perhaps it was a different section of the book or something like that brought out something that they had had experienced. So that, for some reason, is a very
Blog Talk Radio.